I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Clayton, I'm going to start this episode with a statement and not a question. The war on drugs killed Breonna Taylor.
That's a powerful statement.
On March 13th, 2020, Louisville police officers raided Taylor's apartment looking for drugs allegedly stashed by a former boyfriend.
You know, what happened with Breonna Taylor was she was just sort of lumped in. You know, it was almost like a sort of an afterthought. We'll go ahead and raid her house, too, while we're at it.
Kenneth Walker, who was in the apartment and dating Taylor at the time, fired one shot at police. Louisville police officers fired more than 30 shots, many blindly, into the apartment. Taylor was struck and killed.
The mere fact that she was sort of adjacent to a drug, I mean, this is how we justify collateral damage in war. Not great. This becomes a national issue because of a Senate staffer in his early 20s named Don Santarelli, and he proposes it as a wedge issue.
Like, wait a minute, hold on. That's where it came from? He just made a suggestion that we should bust into people's houses, and they went with somebody who had no police. That's crazy.
You'd be stunned how much law is made by 22-year-olds.
That's crazy.
I'm Greg Glaude.
I'm Clayton English.
And this is The War on Drugs. Clayton, how you doing today, man?
I'm good. How about yourself, Greg?
Doing well.
Yeah.
Read something the other day, and the title of the article was The War on Drugs Killed Breonna Taylor. Mm. And, you know, Breonna Taylor, for those who don't know, because, I mean, there's been so many just tragedies since then.
That's a shame we get lost in, you know, the tragedy of which is which, but yeah.
Isn't it kind of crazy? Yeah, like, it's just is. Like.
It happens so often. Now.
Yeah. We cannot get numb to this stuff. Yeah. Like, you really can't. But, well, really, the thrust of the article was just saying that, you know, they were able to break into her house, come in there in the middle of the night, her boyfriend sleeping next to her, and it turns out it was on a no-knock warrant for some small connection that she had with a former kind of friend boyfriend drug dealer that she was not helping whatsoever
right.
on drugs that, and his house was miles away, and it was for a small amount of drugs. Even if they found anything, didn't find anything. Right. Breonna Taylor's dead. Yeah,
you lost somebody close to you. Somebody lost a family member. That was somebody in the community that was, you know, contributing to society.
And
those no knock warrants. That's a real kind of dangerous thing. In the community, because it's just an excuse to kick in somebody's door. Like, I mean, that's essentially what it is. Like, there's no, people can't respond to the police because you haven't announced yourself as the police.
Right.
You haven't, you know, and I don't understand the value in a no-knock warrant. It seems like it's more of a dangerous situation for the officers.
Right, yeah.
Because if this person is selling drugs, then the person that they probably worried about is other drug dealers.
Right.
And you know who kicks in doors without stating this is the police and flashing lights? Other drug dealers.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Omar is the only one from The Wire that ever
right.
announced himself that we are about to rob you.
Right,
yeah.
With a whistle.
With a whistle,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Like, he comes up whistling Farmer in the Daily, you know what it is. Like, the police don't even give you that much of a warning with the no-knock. Like,
yeah. Maybe that should be the law.
Right.
You have to
you
be
gotta,
able to whistle.
Hey, though. Play the yeah. ice cream yeah. music or something.
Yeah.
Like, you got to turn your music up.
But yeah, I mean, and Brianna's story, as tragic as it was, is, you know, not something that's rare in our country.
No, it's not uncommon. It's a little bit too common, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's countless yeah. stories of people, you know, officers getting the wrong address and barreling into someone's house. I mean, yeah. we've seen that a million times.
We saw that in, what was that, Henry County?
Yeah, yeah, Georgia? Outside of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you talked about with, like, police, I mean, there's places that don't do this at all in the United States. I mean, Florida has not allowed for no-knocks for years in statute.
Yeah.
And, like, they're doing just fine.
Right.
It's not necessary. But the reason that you're able to do these things is because of the war on drugs. The vast majority of no-knock warrants and SWAT units yeah. and all this stuff yeah. is to execute drug raids.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff, like, when you make it the war on drugs, which this podcast is about, it's a war. So that's what you're seeing. You're seeing police having to be more like soldiers and
yeah.
looking at citizens as enemy combatants almost.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to talk to Radley Balco, who's
right.
an amazing investigative reporter, has an awesome book called Rise of the Warrior Cop. And what I love about it, it shows, like, cops didn't always act like this. Like, they didn't have these tactics of SWAT team units
yeah.
and military gear that literally is coming over from Iraq
yeah.
and Afghanistan and our war zones.
Military surplus. Yeah.
yeah, and it's coming right to local law enforcement with little to no training, accountability, oversight, and all these things. And the trigger at every point when you see this expanded police power that makes them more like the military, it's all drug related.
Mm.
It's the fear of the drug war, and it
right.
allows for this government expansion. And it's kind of terrifying, and
yeah.
it happens so slow you don't realize it, and then these tragic consequences happen. You're like, wait, we didn't always do it this way. We didn't have to always do it this way. Why are we doing this?
Right, and
yeah.
I like it because I'm glad to hear what he has to say, because it's kind of, it makes me feel like I'm not crazy, because we're seeing how far it's come. But even in my lifetime, I've seen, it doesn't seem like the SWAT team does what they used to do. Seemed like the SWAT team used to be called in dangerous situations when things, you know, when nobody else could deal. Now it seems
right.
like SWAT team is strictly for serving no-knock warrants
right,
and drug offenses.
Yeah, like, yeah, SWAT used to, we used to watch those movies like in the 80s, 90s, like Liam Neeson would be in it or Arnold Schwarzenegger.
They're repelling
down
the side of the building.
There's hostages.
There's hostages. We got a dude
yeah.
and the sniper rifle on the scope.
Yeah.
You got the negotiating dude. Don't take the shot.
Yeah.
What?
And now it's
crazy.
Just dope fiends and they're
right.
Like, that's who we're going
right.
with M4s and all. Yeah. So yeah, I can't wait to get into it with Radley about, like, all this stuff, like the history of it. I mean, the nerd in me just loves that stuff. But it really does show you how we got here, and it doesn't have to be this way, and what other places do, and what can we do, and what are the reforms that can, you know, get us away from these devastating consequences like Breonna
yeah.
Taylor.
And people need to hear it.
Yeah. So let's get into it. I'm excited.
Radley, welcome to the War on Drugs.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you here.
Yeah, this is awesome. Yeah, I'll kind of kick it off here. You know, we all heard the story of Breonna Taylor, that it was a no-knock raid based upon very scant evidence of drug activity at her house. It was a old boyfriend or a friend that used to have packages delivered to her house because his would get porch pirated and hers were able to be protected. You know, they came in at, you know, midnight or whatever it was, 1 o'clock, her and her boyfriend, lawful, you know, firearm owner, and people are barreling into their house. What do you expect? And then he was shot and killed, or she was shot and killed, and he was charged with murder at first. And then I believe those were all dropped. But it seems like these types of tactics, no-knock raids and warrants, not only are incredibly dangerous for the people that are being raided on, and also for the police officers as well. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the rise of these types of tactics? Where does no-knock warrants come from? Has that just always been how it's been? Just kind of talk about that, and then kind of the combination and connection with the war on drugs and how that's kind of risen at the same time with these type of military tactics.
Sure. Before I get into the history, I mean, one thing that I think we need to mention about the Breonna Taylor raid is, you know, if you buy into the war on drugs and you buy into the idea that they have to do these kinds of raids, which I don't buy into either, you know, they had enough evidence for the guy that they were after in this case, right? There was overwhelming evidence. The reason why they raided Breonna Taylor as well, I think, is important to note in a discussion like this. You know, in order to fight a war, you have to dehumanize your enemy, right? You have to make them sort of look like worthless. you have to sort of instill in the public the idea that these people aren't worth sort of the basic dignity that we give to other human beings. And the fact that, you know, what happened with Breonna Taylor was she was just sort of lumped in. You know, it was almost like a sort of an afterthought that was going to, oh, we'll go ahead and raid her house too, since while we're at it. And like the idea that, you know, you're going to be breaking somebody's door down in the middle of the night and subjecting them to these volatile tactics, subjecting them and any innocent people that happen to be in the home, that, you know, just the mere fact that she was sort of adjacent to a drug. I mean, this is, you know, this is how we justify collateral damage in wars,
right?
That's how we justify killing citizens in wars. Well, we had to bomb, you know, this bridge and there happened to be citizens on it, you know, oh well, you know, I mean, it's a tragic, but it had to be done. And, you know, it's important to remember that the no-knock raid for the first sort of couple decades of its existence as an actual sort of policy, this is not something that police chiefs were clamoring for or sheriffs wanted. You know, again, police were reluctant to use it
and
when the places where it was passed. But then Nixon runs in 1968 and he makes, you know, drugs and the drug war a huge priority in his campaign. It's this, you know, pretty blatant racist appeal to sort of white fear of black crime or suburban fear of urban crime. And so, you know, as part of that campaign, he has proposes a number of policies like doing away with cash bail, a lot of really some insane things about sort of indefinite detention. And at one point, they wanted to sort of arrest the attorneys for you know, suspected drug dealers. But one of the big policies was the no-knock raid. It was this idea that, you know, we're going to show how tough we are on drugs by we're going to let cops just kick down doors to you know, go in and seize the drugs. And I mean, the interesting thing about this, you know, I said this is not something that law enforcement wanted. This is not something they were clamoring for. So this becomes a national issue because of a guy, a Senate staffer in his early 20s named Don Santarelli.
Mm-hmm.
And he proposes it as a wedge issue. Like this is going to be something that we can do to appeal to middle America. You know, most people don't think of themselves as the kind of people who are going to be wrongly raided by police officers.
Right.
Wait a minute. Hold on. That's where it came from? He just made a suggestion that we should bust into people's houses and they went with somebody who had no police. That's crazy.
You'd be stunned how much law is made by 22-year-old kids that just say, like, how about this? Yeah, man. This whole city's run by, like, people making $30,000 a year.
Crazy.
It's nuts. Yeah.
I interviewed Santarelli for my book, and you know, today he says this is one of the biggest mistakes of his career, and he's very sort of mournful almost for the way that this tactic has been sort of used and abused over the years. You know, but it's part of this successful campaign, and Nixon gets elected. And in, I believe it's 70 or 71, Congress passes this law. They pass two laws. One is a bill that authorizes no-knock raids for federal narcotics officers. And the other is one that legalizes no-knock raids for police officers in Washington, D.C., because Congress has jurisdiction over the District of Columbia. And there are two very different reactions. In D.C. at the time actually had a pretty progressive police chief named Jerry Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed him for the book as well. And Wilson hated this idea. And, you know, when I asked him why he didn't want to implement this idea, this no-knock raid idea, he said some things that I think are pretty profound. First, he said, you know, nobody goes into drug dealing to kill cops, right? Any drug dealer knows that if you kill a cop, you're going to be lucky to survive the next 5 or 6 seconds.
It's not good business.
It's not good for business, yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible business.
Right,
yeah.
It's bad for business. You're going to be it's bad for life, right? You're probably going to be killed or you're going to go to prison for the rest of your life or you're going to be executed. The other thing he said is, you know, the main justification for no-knock raids other than safety of police is that they need that evidence in the house to get a prosecution, right? And if you wait and give the person time to destroy the evidence, then you know, that person's going to beat the charge, right? And from his perspective, it's like, you know, the amount of drugs that you can flush down the toilet or dispose of, you know, in the whatever 20, 30 seconds that the police ought to give you before breaking in, you know, that's not a significant quantity enough that it justifies the risk that comes with a no-knock raid and the kind of violation of civil liberties.
Yeah, you're not a kingpin. You're not El Chapo if you got it down in two flushes.
Yeah, and if the purpose of the drug war is to get the drugs off the streets, you know, those drugs aren't on the streets anymore, right? They're flushed.
Yeah, nobody's going to be using
it. Yeah. So,
you know, his officers refused to implement it. And interestingly, crime actually goes down in D.C. Mm-hmm. over the next couple of years as it goes up in the rest of the country. I don't think his decision not to do no-knock raids is the reason crime went down, but it certainly didn't make things worse. But at the federal level, it's very different. So Nixon had also set up these strike forces, which were federal narcotics officers teaming up with local police. And these guys just go crazy. They start kicking down doors left and right. They're raiding places without warrants. They're lying on warrants. And they're raiding the wrong houses, and people are getting terrorized, and some people are getting killed. You know, since then, there's a trail of bodies. You know, I write about a botched no-knock that ended up with an innocent person dying. You know, I would say there are probably four or five of those a year at least. Lots more where people were injured. Lots more where cops are killed or injured. And we see this in the Breonna Taylor case. So the search warrant for the raid on Breonna Taylor's home was illegal. It had this cut and paste boilerplate language that they'd used in all the other search warrants in that investigation. And I think it's a very sort of underappreciated aspect of the case, which is that this is kind of standard policy. I mean, the police departments across the country are routinely violating the Supreme Court's ruling, and nobody really cares. You know, I found in Little Rock a few years ago, I did a review of about 100 search warrants over a year and a half period in Little Rock, 100 no-knock warrants. And I found that I think it was 90 to 95% of them had verbatim, word for word, cut and paste in the no-knock section. And, you know, I actually interviewed the judges who signed those warrants, and they didn't think they had done anything wrong. They had no idea why I was even, you know, asking about this. And it's sort of like they were signing illegal warrants. They were violating the law, and yet because there are no consequences for anybody involved, the judges, the prosecutors, the police, it's just become sort of routine for police to do this. And that's what happened in Breonna Taylor's case.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. And that she's kind of just looked at as the same as someone who actually was a suspected trafficker or whatever else, and just the exact same on that same footing. And to your point, it's that almost dehumanizing of everyone. It's to general, just boilerplate, these are the people that are in a different subcategory of human beings, more or less, and we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, there's no consideration for the humanity. And, you know, the other thing about Breonna Taylor's case, there was a criminologist at the University of Eastern Kentucky who, part of his grad student thesis, he was allowed to sort of embed himself in the Louisville Police Department. And he talked about how he went on a lot of these raids, and he was sort of in the, you know, car watching it. And over again, he saw them, the battering ram would hit the door at the same time that they announced that they were police, right? And this is a, you know, brazen violation of Supreme Court. Again, the police called those knock and announce raids, right? Even though the whole purpose of knock and announce is to give the people inside notice and let them avoid this violence by coming to the door.
Yeah, if your second knock is a battering ram, you didn't really knock.
Yeah. We have a few bills to pay, so we're going to go to a couple commercials right now.
Hi, I'm Jason Flom, CEO and founder of Lava for Good Podcasts, home to Bone Valley, Wrongful Conviction, The War on Drugs, and many other great podcasts. Today, we're asking you, our listeners, to take part in a survey. Your feedback is going to help inform how we make podcasts in the future. Your complete and candid answers will help us continue to bring you more insightful and inspiring stories about important topics that impact us all. So please, go to lavaforgood.com/survey and participate today. Thank you for your support.
The War on Drugs podcast is sponsored by Stand Together. Stand Together is a philanthropic community that partners with America's boldest changemakers to tackle the root causes of our country's biggest problems. Like many others who experience addiction, Scott Strode was using drugs and alcohol to numb the pain. For him, it was childhood trauma. In his early 20s, Scott was invited into a boxing gym by a friend, and that's where he discovered the healing power of sport and community. In 2006, Scott founded The Phoenix, a free, sober, active community that uses the transformative power of sport to help people treat and heal from addiction. Scott Strode is one of many entrepreneurs partnering with Stand Together to drive solutions in education, healthcare, poverty, and criminal justice. To learn more, visit standtogether.org.
You know, one of the things that we are discussing on this podcast quite a bit is how the war on drugs was never about drugs, and it was about all these other things. And one of the themes that I really see in your book is, you know, from the 60s to the Nixon eras through Reagan and Bush and Obama and all throughout, drugs are used kind of as a reason to expand military, kind of reduce some of the constitutional protections from the Fourth Amendment and all these other things. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that history of militarization through the eyes of the war on drugs a little bit, or just generally there?
Yeah, I think that's an important question. I think there are two aspects to police militarization. The first is the stuff, right? The guns, the armored personnel carriers, the helicopters, the bayonets, ballistics gear, all of that. And that, you know, that stuff is all problematic, you know, for very obvious reasons, which is this is stuff that was designed for use on a battlefield that's being used in domestic policing, you know, on American streets and American neighborhoods against American citizens. But the other side, I think, which is sort of unappreciated and maybe overlooked a little bit, is the mindset, militaristic mindset. And the two kind of go hand in hand, right? If you have if you take a domestic police officer and you dress him in camouflage, you dress him like a soldier, you train him like a soldier, you arm him like a soldier, and you tell him, you know, he's fighting a war, whether it's a war on drugs or crime or terrorism or, you know, anything else. You know, we shouldn't be surprised if they start to think of themselves as soldiers and think of their job as the job of a soldier. And so the mindset, though, I think, you know, we've increasingly seen this sort of us versus them mentality in policing. This is driven a lot at the top by politicians who kind of have, you know, described the war on drugs in very warlike sort of militaristic terms.
Yeah, I always think about like when I used to put pads on for football, like in high school, like it changes your mentality.
You ready to hit.
Yeah, like I don't care if I'm at like the Dunbar High School, you know, powder puff football game for homecoming, like I'm going through some people.
Yeah,
yeah, like, you know, it just changed your mentality. And if you're like doing flag football, like you're a different person, like, of course, that's going to change that. And obviously, that changes your perception as a citizen. Like, these aren't my neighbors anymore. These aren't community police. These are occupiers in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I think just intuitively, it's going to have a profound effect, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, I've often sort of joked about this on social media, but when you see, you know, an officer in a city dressed in camouflage, there's no practical reason for that, right? I mean, you're not raiding woods in the middle of New York, right? I mean, and moreover, it tends to be very conspicuous. They're not trying to hide from anything, right? The whole point is to send a message. I mean, that's why they wear it.
Right.
And again, you know, the problem with this is that police officers aren't soldiers, right? They're supposed to be peace officers. Mm-hmm. Their job is to protect our constitutional rights, whereas a soldier's job is basically to kill people and break things, right? To annihilate a foreign enemy.
Very different primary objectives.
Right. Yeah. And for a long time in this country, we've done a good job of separating those two and keeping them apart. But I think the war on drugs, what it's done, probably one of the more destructive things it's done is it has blurred that line between police and soldier. And it's while we've done a good job of keeping soldiers out of domestic policing, where we've kind of dropped the ball is we've allowed our domestic police to become more and more like soldiers.
Yeah. And Radley, one thing I always kind of discuss is the relationship between violent crime and the drug war. Can you talk a little bit about that connection between militarization, drug war, and actual just violent crime occurring? Like how much violence in this country happens because of drug prohibition and the war that we're, you know, putting out on narcotics?
Well, I mean, if you go back to the prohibition era and you look at the homicide rate, I mean, there's a spike the moment alcohol is prohibited through the Volstead Act, and then it drops the moment that it's repealed. So that's, you know, that's pretty striking. And if you look at the homicide rate over a longer period of time, there's a spike right at about the time Nixon declares war on drugs and implements his policies, and during the Reagan administration. So, you know, I do think there's clearly every time you sort of when you prohibit drugs for the first time, you're going to see a spike because, you know, you're taking a legal activity and pushing it underground. You know, I always make the joke, you don't very often see people murdered in a Michelob deal gone bad. Right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
That Coors Light.
The Corona Light boys are coming over. Yeah. Right. I mean, if two alcohol distributors have a beef, they go to court and settle it. If two drug dealers have a beef, it's a whole different matter. Right.
Right.
But, you know, also just, you know, in general, when you sort of crack down on drugs, then you disrupt the sort of established black market. So then people start fighting for turf again. I mean, we saw this in Mexico when the U.S. government persuaded the Mexican government to take a more militaristic approach to the war on drugs. It disrupted the black market. And you saw this just massive, heart-wrenching sort of escalation in homicides across Mexico. And, you know, the really perverse thing about it, I know I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but you saw politicians justify this by saying basically, I mean, everyone from Hillary Clinton to Bush's drug czar, that, you know, these tens of thousands of murdered Mexicans were sort of the price that we had to pay to stop Americans from getting high, right? I mean, it's just like, you want to talk about dehumanization. I mean, it's just this utter sort of disregard for human life.
Yeah, and kind of switching to something a little bit different but on the same topic is, you know, recently, you know, Joe Biden just asked, you know, pardoned everyone with low-level drug possession, kind of a more symbolic approach, and then also potentially rescheduling. And we've seen, you know, 35 states have some sort of form of legal marijuana across the country. I think it would shock people, and Clay, this is something we've talked about, how much marijuana still is a major contributor to the drug war, criminal justice, and kind of interactions between police and citizens. You know, can you talk a little bit about like how marijuana is still able to be, you know, with the smell of marijuana coming from a car, like civil asset
forfeiture? Which is crazy too, because it can be used for anything. Like if you can smell marijuana with both of my windows up while I'm doing 60,
yeah,
you are RoboCop. You are like, yeah, and they use it for everything.
Well, what amazes me is they can pull a car over because they smelled, you know, marijuana that was, you know, locked in the trunk, right, of the car. Or they can smell marijuana that, you know, gave rise to a demeaning roadside search where they go through every single bag and throw everything out on the ground and they don't find anything. And yet nobody, you know, clearly they didn't smell marijuana. Right. And yet nobody says anything. It's like, the officer was mistaken. Oh, well, move on.
And then you're able to use everything there because it was a...
Or even if you don't, you just subjected somebody to a humiliating search. You know, their shit's like spread out all over the interstate and the cop's like, all right, see you later, go on, you know, and they move on to the next person. I mean, I wrote about a story where one of these canine units just outside of St. Louis, Collinsville, Illinois, you know, he pulled over this guy and, you know, the drug dog magically alerted and they didn't find anything. And of course, the cops will say, well, there must have been a shake, you know.
Yeah,
right.
Trace amounts
and...
And that guy sued, the guy that got pulled over, and he found out that this cop was how he would train his dog is he would go to roadside motels and hotels into the parking lot, and he would rub pot on the bumpers of some of the cars, and then he would take his dog through it, and if the dog alerted, and that's how he trained his dog. Well, imagine if you're one of those cars and you get pulled over the next day, you know, and the drug dog comes out and alerts, and now you got to search, you know? I mean, the drug dog thing, I mean, we could do a whole episode just on that.
Oh, man, I've never...
Probable cause on a leash.
Believed on them, like, all the way. Like, no. Like, and even the research shows they're only good for about, like, 2 hours out of the day.
Well, and also...
To sniff stuff, so...
I am, too.
Well, and also...
I'll give you a solid two. Right?
That's it, baby.
Well, the other thing is...
For government work.
Well, the other thing is, I mean... Yeah, these dogs are trained. Dogs have great noses, but we've also bred into dogs for several hundred years this innate desire to please us.
Make us happy.
And so, if you're a drug handler, you want a dog that's going to please you. And so, the dog can read that. And if your drug handler thinks there's drugs in the car, the dog's going to alert because it wants to please the handler.
Yeah.
And that's not taught out of them. I mean, I've talked to people who train drug dogs, and they've told me. We could train that out of dogs so that they only alert when there are actually drugs in the car. Police departments don't want that.
Right.
They want dogs that are going to assert, that are going to alert whenever the cop wants them to alert.
Right. It's amazing.
Yeah. The cop get excited. The dog get excited.
Yep.
They go
Everybody's happy.
Yeah. Radley, we want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it, man.
My pleasure.
The work you're doing is important. And let these people know how they can support you, where they can find you, and where they can get more informed on what's going on.
Sure. So I'm an independent journalist now. So you can find my work at The Watch, which is a Substack. So if you go to radleybalco.substack.com or just Google my name and The Watch or my name and Substack, you should be able to find it pretty easily.
Awesome.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Everyone go check out Radley's work. He is one of the foremost experts on this issue. His book, Rise of the Warrior Cop, is terrific. Something that definitely got me more interested in my career to do this. So, yeah, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you so much.
Clayton wasn't cheap to get, so we had to cut a couple commercials. We'll be right back.
Somebody got to pay me.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The theme I kept seeing was drugs was an excuse to kind of militarize the police. And so it wasn't that we were concerned about drugs and safety. It was, this is an area that we can exploit to actually increase the police force, increase this kind of presence, increase this police state.
Yeah, I mean, once you get past automatic weapons, I don't know who you think they're dealing with. Like, you need that much military equipment. And I think, I don't know, it's scary because I think the military probably has more protocol.
There's accountability. There's protocol. Like, if you act up, you go to a military tribunal. There's investigations.
That's a war crime. Yeah, that's yeah. You know, like, you could get court-martialed. You could get, yeah. Like, and I think with police, they're getting all that equipment with none of that.
There's no training requirements. There's nothing like it. And in fact, with the, it's called the 1033 program. If you don't use it within a year, you have to give it back.
Oh, so you got to use it.
You're incentivized to use it in some way, shape,
so
or form.
So whenever something pops, the next thing that happens, whether it's, you know, the high school football game was out of control.
Yeah.
Put that riot gear on.
Get it on. Yeah.
Yes.
You have to
go
show
out there. Don't smack anybody, but show them we got it.
Yeah.
So we can keep it.
Yeah. Seriously, it's crazy. And, you know, when, I mean, you're dude, I'm a guy, like, we're idiots. All we do is, like, we have new toys, we want to use them.
Yes.
And so you're going to give these things to police forces, they're going to use them, and, you know, you have all this stuff lying around. What is the most common thing you do? It's drug warrants, and we've seen it a million times go horribly wrong. These middle-of-the-night SWAT-style raids, no-knock warrants where they're not knocking and announcing, and, I mean, I think the most famous one that we've seen past couple years with Breonna Taylor.
Yeah.
It's a midnight raid. Their only evidence was that the guy that was their target had packages delivered to her house at some point because they were on and off again dating. And that was the justification to break into her home at midnight without announcing themselves.
What you just said, break into, because that's what it is. Like, if you announce yourself as the police and you've got the place surrounded, you probably have the upper hand. But when you just bust through somebody's door, and if you say you're going after drug dealers worry about other drug dealers.
Yeah, they like, kind of run in the crowd.
Yeah, they don't, and they don't announce themselves.
Yeah.
They don't be like, hello, this is the cartel.
Yeah.
We're outside.
Yeah.
Where's our money?
Yeah.
You know, they just bust in and they start shooting. So now you're blending together. How is that even safe for the officers?
It's not.
And I think people forget that. We look at like, oh, that's the bad guy. These are the good guys. These are the bad guys. These are the good guys. But everybody's a human being in this. And that's stuff you don't even think about, like when you talk about the war on drugs. Make sure you follow the War on Drugs podcast so you don't miss any new episodes or any of our quick fix bonus content. And we'll be back next week with another episode of War on Drugs. Until then, thank you for listening.
Executive producers for War on Drugs are Jason Flom and Kevin Wirtis. Senior producer is Michael Epstein. Editing by Nick Massetti and Michael Epstein. Associate producer and mix and mastering by Nick Massetti. Additional production by Jeff Clyburn and Anna McEntee.
Be sure to follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Lava for Good. You can follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Glod, and you can follow Clayton English on Instagram at Clayton English. The War on Drugs is a production of Lava for Good podcast in association with Signal Company Number One. I'm your host, Clayton English.
And I'm Greg Glod. And thanks for listening to the War on Drugs podcast.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi. I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast.
Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.